Mm-hmm. All right. Well, welcome everyone to the Region 4 Planning and Policy Council. My name is Kirby Tsai. I'm with the department. I think we're all pretty familiar with this format, although we're using MS Teams this time. We're pretty familiar with meeting virtually. As you may be aware, the executive order, Governor Lee's executive order to meet electronically was not extended. However, the council determined that with the continuation of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to ensure a safe and healthy meeting environment, these regional council meetings would continue to be held virtually. With that being said, if you have any questions or if you're presenting, if you could please state your name first. It's helpful when capturing the minutes. This meeting will also be recorded. You should have a notification at the top of your screen if you've entered the meeting via MS Teams. And there was one last thing I want you to say. Oh, to please make sure you mute your phone or your computer if you're not speaking, just to prevent any feedback from coming through. Robin, I'm going to go ahead and go through the attendance, and then I'll hand it over to you. So I'm going to go with the individuals who have joined via the computer first, since I could see your name, and then I'll go to the individuals who have called in. So like I said, this is Kirby Tsai with the department, Avis Easley from the department, Dalmas Sanchez, Elliot Pinsley, Cooper or Cal Bryant, Mary Linden, who's actually joining us from Tatis, where the meeting location typically takes place, Robin Nobling, Willie Ross, Angie Thompson, Rusty Totten Emerson, let me see here, and we have individuals who have called in. There are two individuals. If you don't mind to please state your name.
They were both from TMHCA, I believe.
Benika Knight, LMSW.
Hi, Benika. There's someone else on the call.
With a number of 41 at the very end of your phone. Also from TMHCA, I believe.
I wonder if they're muted by accident. They don't look muted on my screen.
They don't look muted, no.
If you
can always
unmute
come back
yourself,
to it.
Yeah, or if you would like to, another option is you can, if you can't, hopefully you can mute, but maybe you can put your name in the chat box at least, and we can announce your name if you can do that.
If they've joined via phone, I don't think they have access.
Oh, they're on the phone. I'm sorry. Apologize.
That's okay. We'll just touch base. We'll circle back. It's fine. Go ahead, Robin.
All righty. Thank you. And I am trying to help Tristan of Hope and Healing come in. Actually, Kirby, if you wouldn't mind so I can get on with the meeting, let me just had a text. Could you please email the link to Hope in Healing, Inc., all together, hopeinhealinginc@gmail.com.
Hope in Healing, Inc.?
Hope in Healing, Inc.
Okay.
And that'll be Tristan. All righty. All right, so I want to welcome everybody today. Thank you for joining us. May meeting that we, and just to reiterate for everybody, these meetings are held four times a year. They are the first Wednesday in May, in August, in November, and in February. We had a slight blip because of COVID last fall, but I imagine we'll be back on track again. So look for us the first Wednesday May, August, November, and February. So, and welcome all. We do have, I want to thank our folks that have, our leadership that are here with us today. I know Angie is on, Angie Thompson, who is our vice chair, Rusty Totten Emerson, who is our secretary, I don't know that I saw that Evelyn Yergin or Shara Biggs is on, and if they are, we'll be calling on them in a little bit for their adult committee reports. And I want to thank Elliot Pinsley, our legislative chair, for being on. So at this time, Kirby, would you like to do a roll call, or would you like me to have everybody just give a shout-out so Rusty can record it?
I just did it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I did hear that. I was busy trying to – I'm sorry. I was trying to get Tristan in, so I wasn't paying as much attention. Forgive me.
Okay. I did see Sheldon Walker just joined the the call. Good. You can add him to your attendance.
Okay. Yes. And Sheldon, it's good to have Sheldon because I know he was – like many of us, all of us are always at other meetings and coming and going from different places. At this time, I'm going to ask everyone to look at their minutes. And take a look at the minutes from the last meeting in February. Rusty, if you'll go ahead and do a call for a motion when folks have had a chance to review, I would appreciate that. We'll give them a minute or two.
My name is misspelled. This is Elliot, just one T in Elliot. That's the only thing I see. Thank you.
Yeah, I noticed that, Elliot. I'm sorry. I have a member with a 2T Elliot, so I get them confused.
No problem. I'm so used to it. It is absolutely okay.
There's Tristan. All right. So we've got Tristan on. That's great. And we had Sheldon come in late. So those are our two folks that just joined us. So we want to make sure we get them in the roll call. Alrighty. So
does anybody see any further adjustments to the minutes?
Thank you, Rusty. Go ahead.
If not, can I get a motion to accept the minutes with correction?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes, Rusty.
Thank you, Elliot. Is there a second?
This is Angie. I'll second.
Thank you, Angie.
Okay.
Sounds like the motion passed.
One more amendment. Yep. My email is misspelled there, too. It's not Elliot. It's actually Behavioral Health Foundation under the Legislative Committee update. I just noticed that. Sorry about that.
All right. Could you give it to me correctly so I can write it down here?
Yes, it's Elliot with two L's and one T at Behavioral. With an A-L at the end, healthfoundation.org. Is that enough for you?
Okay.
Does that work?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Okay. Tristan is having difficulty with sound. Kirby, would you mind responding? Sometimes I found with some of the with a headset on, sometimes you've got to identify that's where you're getting your sound through. If Tristan has not identified specifically that that's where he's using it, that may be a problem. So.
Yeah, so it looks like Elliot responded. That's exactly what I was going to say. If you
caused
an issue, yeah.
All right. So, so thank you for any other additions or corrections in the minutes. All right. Go ahead, Rusty.
But I think we had a second. So, if there's no objections, I guess we'll approve the motion.
Yeah, and no further discussion. We'll take a vote. Great. Okay. And Avis, according to you, we can do
I'm
this.
Sorry, Robin. You broke up. What did you say? I'm sorry.
We can do this by voice vote, Avis, for the minute. Is that correct?
Well, once you have your first and your second, you're fine.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And is there anyone in dissent of accepting the minutes? Okay. Hearing no dissent, we'll pass them unanimously. Thank you very much. Let's go ahead and move on to what's that?
We're getting a lot of echo here. Can you ask everybody who's not speaking to turn, put themselves on mute? I think that may help that situation.
All righty. And apparently that did, Ange. Thank you very much. I have to admit, folks, that with this particular format, I can't see as much as what I'm used to seeing. So I'm feeling rather limited in doing that. I'm so used to a Zoom format. Oh, I'm glad, Kurt. Excellent. Glad to have you, Kurt.
Glad to be here.
Okay. Hang on, folks. I'm making adjustments in this thing. Sitting gallery. Okay.
It might be helpful to, there's a couple different gallery views. Have you noticed that, Robin?
I've had two. I've seen the one that shows participants and I only get two people. I've seen another one that puts people in seats in the together mode. And the large gallery preview is not lit up for me where I can choose that.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So thank you we got the minutes done. We had sent out the needs assessments to everybody. If you have further questions on that, please feel free to contact myself or any of the other leadership on the needs assessment. I'm not going to go into that. That would require sharing on this format, which not really used to. So I think we'll let that go, but we did get that out to everybody. We have someone else joining us. And I would like to, at this point, ask Kirby to give us the update from the department at this time, please.
Okay. All right, just a few updates since we last met in February. The February report, 3-year plan, year 2, FY21, has been completed and shared with regional council leadership. If you're interested in viewing this document, please contact your regional council chair or vice chair. The department would like to encourage the planning and policy councils to identify matters affecting people with mental illness, substance use issues, and/or co-occurring disorders that may require legislative attention in the 2022 legislative session. Regional councils may use the 2021 needs assessments to help generate ideas or support for legislative proposals. Please utilize the legislative proposal process steps and form that was sent out via email to begin your process. Proposals should be submitted to me by close of business on May 17th. And I believe Elliot will talk more about on this later in the meeting.
Yes.
The department will receive an additional $15 million from SAMHSA through the Community Mental Health Services Block Grant and $30 million for the Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment Block Grant to assist in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. States may use the supplemental COVID-19 relief funding to respond to needs and gaps due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. You'll receive more information about that in the coming weeks. The department will also receive an additional $687,000 to set aside 5% of the mental health block grant allocation to support evidence-based crisis systems. The 5% set aside will be used for evidence-based crisis care programs addressing the needs of individuals with serious mental illness and children with serious mental and emotional disturbances. Funds may be used to address some or all of a set of core crisis care elements, including centrally deployed 24/7 mobile crisis units, short-term residential crisis stabilization beds, evidence-based protocols for delivering services to individuals with suicide risk, and regional or statewide crisis call centers coordinating in real time. You'll also receive more information about this as well. Tennessee's Emotional Support Line for Pandemic Stress is adding a new method for people to reach out for help. the free and confidential line now has the capability to offer assistance via text message. Tennessee healthcare workers, first responders, and all Tennesseans working in education, including educators and district and school administrators and staff, dealing with feelings of stress, anxiety, sadness, or depression related to work, can now call or text the emotional support line at 888-642-7886 from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time daily. Specially trained mental health professionals who answer calls or respond to texts through the line can provide emotional support through active listening, help identify and address basic needs, and provide reference tools for managing stress and making a plan for self-care. And that is what I have, Robin.
Thank you so much. Does anybody have any questions for Kirby or any thing that they need a little more information on there to...
This is Mary Linden, and Kirby wouldn't have this update, but we have recently added some ability to respond to not just first responders like EMS, but also law enforcement.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Anyone else? All right. Since we have the benefit of having Mr. Hipple here, I would love to give you an opportunity to share with us.
Hey, Robin. Well, my update, I guess, is I am currently about to walk into the offices downtown. I'm going to check some mail. I'm going to go harass Matt Yancey in his office. And then I'm going to walk over to Legislative Plaza. I think that they're probably in the last maybe day or two of the 2021 legislative session. So I was going to see what I could see over there, and hopefully they'll get wrapped up here in the next day or so. Other than that, things are going well. A lot of activity legislation-wise, a lot of activity that in our division, rulemaking-wise, policy-wise, that we're going to get ready to take a look at and tackle once the legislature leaves town and we can change our focus to that. As you know, Avis, Kirby, and Amy are always working hard, and we're looking forward to the statewide planning and policy meeting. And we've gotten some good instruction, I think clear direction out to the regions about what to expect for May and June regarding regional meetings and statewide meetings for electronic meeting. We will reassess after the statewide meeting to see where we are in the state vaccination-wise and the comfort level of the different chairs and regions. And we'll take that in consideration before getting some direction, further direction out around that. Our Office of Research continues to hum along, providing a lot of support for some really cool initiatives that are going on. I think we just started year two of Project Rural Recovery, and one of our staff members in the Office of Research is the lead evaluator for that grant, and we're already seeing a lot of good impact there in rural communities. And continue to gather information around juvenile justice and school-based behavioral health liaisons and children's behavioral health safety net and a lot of the CHI, a lot of the programs that have either been expanded or created here in the last 3 to 4 years under the end of the Haslam administration and the start of the Lee administration. So that's my update, and I hope everyone's doing well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Kurt. Thank you very much. We have Cooper here. We'll move on to the MCO report. I know we have Cooper here from UHCCP, and would you like to share anything that's activities that you've been involved in lately? Cooper, are you? Well, muted. Not that I can see.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. I was asking.
I couldn't get myself off mute. Sorry.
I wondered. That's why I was looking to see if I could see if you were on mute or not. All right. Yeah. Could you just give us an update over there with what you've been involved in?
My personal update, I got a new work computer, and I hate switching computers because I lose emails and I lose files. So anyway, I put it aside. I'm back on my old computer again. So I said I won't be able to get onto meetings because things aren't transferring properly. But other than that, we're still operating at home. Everybody is telecommuting. Mm-hmm. And I can make myself visible too. And we are not attending meetings in person yet. I am vaccinated. I have both of my vaccines, but we're still operating from distance. So we will see how it goes, I suppose. Maybe in the fall, if you know majority of the people are vaccinated, we might be able to start attending conferences and health fairs with caution, of course. Social distancing, but we're waiting. So that's where we are at the moment. And I'm still sponsoring in the community. Let me know if anybody needs anything. So I'm here for you.
And I'll give a personal thank you for your sponsorship of our walk. We very much appreciated that and having your participation. You've been great through the years. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Cooper. Do we have anybody here from Amerigroup? We'll give it a chance to unmute in case we do. And I don't see anyone there on our list. So I'm going to move. And I don't think we have Luke Hare here. And Barbara, I believe, is on the list now. So, Kirby, if you hear anything, I know at one point Barbara was not on the on the list, but I've addressed that. So I believe we have Barbara Ann Nelson on the list for Blue Care. I know our the original individual that we had, Carrie Menefee, has moved over, and she's not with Amerigroup anymore. And I know they were looking at getting us a new person for attendance. So that may still be transitional with Amerigroup. So I'm going to move on to committee reports, and I'm going to go to Children's Committee, and we do not have a report because one of the things that we're going to need to address in new business is a children's chair. I want to thank Servine Johnson for her service. She really did work very, very hard to build the Children's Committee and did some innovative things while she was, with us as chair. This past year with COVID, apparently it's been very difficult. And our children's chair, there was a lot of transition around there, I believe, for Servine. And she was not able to convene the children's committee and ultimately in the last month has had to drop off from that position. So we will be looking, we'll be talking about that when we're done with the report. That we'll be looking for a new children's chair. The adult committee, let me see if, I don't think we have Evelyn or Shara on. I did talk to Evelyn yesterday. I know she was, they had a lot going on and she was going to try her best to get here today. And so it does not look like our adult committee was able to come and give a report. I will say that they did participate in the needs assessment and did present two needs into the needs assessment process for the adult committee. So I do appreciate that. Today, we're going to let our legislative committee chair shine. We're going to let Elliot Pinsley. This is his time of year, and I'd like to, I know that we got a report from Kurt, but I'd also like to hear from Elliot about anything in the last few months that legislatively that he'd like to highlight, and then have him move on to the specific work of our committee. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Elliot.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, Robin. I'll be frank. I knew I had a little bit of time, but I was not preparing to give a more expanded update beyond legislative proposals. So I can answer questions, but I think there's been, as Kurt mentioned, there's a lot of action. It looks like we're wrapping things up, and a lot of late conversation on things like medical marijuana and things that are relevant to this group, but some things that are yet to be determined and decided. But there's been a lot. There's been some good bills. I'll just share that the mental health parity bill passed both chambers, and that is a very exciting step. I was on Mary Linden on this call, and Bill Dobbins and folks with NAMI Tennessee. There's an echo here. Okay, that's better. So I want to thank Mary Linden for her leadership efforts in moving that forward and being, I believe, she did most of the legwork in getting that thing written and ahead. And then Bill Dobbins, the lobbyist who's presented to this group before, did great work. But it's really exciting. There is a report that just recently came out just in the last week. I forgot the name of the organization, but just really showing why we need parity laws, parity enforcement, making sure that people have equitable access to behavioral health care. So that was exciting to see. And there were some other exciting news, of course, with the $250 million K-12 Mental Health Trust Fund. The less exciting news is that very few of the very many appropriations amendments that were filed related to behavioral health ended up making it into the budget, as far as I can see. So there's been some good, and then, of course, a lot of other things have not moved forward. So, but the department has been doing an amazing job getting as much federal grant money and using their money to respond both to the pandemic and plan for future needs. So much appreciated. So I'll just stop. Is there any questions or that I can answer from my position on what's happened in the last couple months?
So, Elliot, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but you did exactly what I was hoping you would do and sum up what you knew at your fingertips. So, yes, if anybody does have any questions, for Elliot, now would be a great time before we have him go into his specific report for Region 4.
Yep. And one more thing is 10 Care 3. There is a formal complaint that has been filed that's similar to a lawsuit to try to halt that. So that is a very interesting item to follow and see what happens. Tennessee Justice Center and others have taken exception to the way they're using some statute that requires federal comment period for some changes where 10 Care 2 is expiring and morphing parts of it into 10 Care 3. And so it'll be interesting. So while 10 Care 3 is operational, that's the quote unquote block grant that most everybody may have heard of by now. That is ongoing and will be continuing. There are still rumors that the Biden administration could consider fully rescinding that waiver, but we are just waiting and seeing right now. So there's some action there, but I thought this should be aware.
All right. Thank you for that. And Mary Linden, we'd love to hear from you because I know you've been very active with this also.
Well, I'll just say that the about the 10 Care 3 block grant, the Biden administration did just recently rescind a similar, not a block grant, but a similar proposal, a waiver proposal from Texas that had been approved by the Trump administration. So I think there's pretty firm speculation, is that a thing, that could happen to the 10 Care block grant. And I'll just add to what Elliot said about parity in that we're all looking forward to the very first parity report from Tennessee Commerce and Insurance in January of 2022.
I want to thank you so much for your work on that, Mary Linden. I know you were a big force in that. And doing that, we'll thank Elliot and Bill and the other folks that were Ben Harrington, that were very involved in that. Thank you so much. You were tireless in that. Really appreciate it. And you kept on, which you were a heck of an advocate in that particular case. Thank you so much. All right, let's turn it back to Elliot to talk about our particular legislative proposals.
Sounds good. So there are three proposals that we are considering putting forward And by considering, that means frantically figuring out how to get them on paper. I'm kidding a little bit, but these are due a bit unexpectedly. We were told that they were due June 1st and then moved up a couple weeks to May 17th. So a little bit tricky with planning, but we are going to work on it. We are going to resubmit one that we had moved to the commissioner through the committee, statewide committee to the commissioner last year. Regarding stigma and access to care, we basically are recommending not using terms like substance abuse, which are shown by research to reduce likelihood that someone will access services. It will increase negative attitudes from clinicians toward the people they serve, and reduce the outcomes related to quality of care and how well someone does when terms like substance abuse are used systemically. So what we are proposing, again, is the same thing with even extra evidence this year, that we are recommending the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services change their name to the Department of Mental Health and Substance Use Services, so that our state is showing very strongly that we are not supporting anything that contributes directly to stigma. Again, I know that some language is a tricky and controversial matter, but that's why we rely on research and data here, and certainly would be more than happy to work with the department on a different name change if there's another idea. We were just using the most simple, easiest to change thing that would not require quite as much. So that's one of them that we're moving forward. Then the next one is related to workforce development, and as for those who were involved last year in the legislative committee, we put one forward from our region last year that I agreed to withdraw because it did involve another state department, which is the Department of Health. But Kurt and Zach from the department committed to not only brief the commissioner on what we were asking for, but have a conversation with the Department of Health on this. We asked modeling after a New Mexico law that led to a strategic plan to help with workforce shortages, for survey questions to be added to the relicensure surveys that folks must complete when they're applying to be licensed and relicensed and such once every couple of years. And I know that COVID has been very difficult for all. And I know that Kurt and Zach have had the initial conversation with the Department of Health, let them know about this, that we were interested in talking about this. My understanding is that we're back at about a little bit of wait and see, and you know, as the pandemic is continuing to be resolved before that conversation can be moved forward further. So that's my understanding. So what we're shifting focus a little bit this year, and we still want to address this. And my understanding is that not just our region, but other regions elevated workforce development as a major priority across the state, which is great. And so we want to put a legislative proposal forward that really tries to get at this again. And what can we do? And the commissioner had mentioned in a recent statewide planning and policy council, maybe we could create a work group within the planning and policy council to start looking at this. I thought that was a great idea. And I've talked to a bunch of folks. Kurt is one of them and others, and got some ideas from the community on who we can, you know, what we can do, what's reasonable. And we'll be putting forward a proposal to ask directly for such a group and require that there is a work group that looks directly at workforce shortages and potentially request a bit of facilitation resources for the department as well, so that they're able to help us with that. So that's the second one. Because that one's new, I'll pause. Does anybody have questions about anything I've said so far?
Elliot, I think I'm just going to comment, which is you mentioned the needs assessment, and this was something that we as Region 4 put into our needs assessment, is the importance of a workforce study or the workforce issue. I know that, as you alluded to, that they did this in other regions too. So we really are hoping that we see some movement on the issue of workforce.
Great, thank you. I will continue. Hearing no questions. The third one has recently come up, and it was following a rule change at the federal level, where the Biden administration announced that federal grant money, such as the the substance use disorder block grant money that the state receives here in Tennessee can now be used to purchase fentanyl test strips. As many of you may know, fentanyl is the leading driver of overdose deaths in an increasing way. We're seeing more and more fentanyl mixed in with all sorts of different drugs or used directly by more long-term users. And it's killing people left and right, quite frankly. It's just extremely scary and frightening. And fentanyl is something that just a very small amount can do a lot of damage. So it's something that law enforcement have to be very careful for, and sometimes even need more than one Narcan kit just from touching it. So it's really, really something we need to be thinking of. And people who are taking a pill from someone they don't know, or even someone they know that doesn't come from a licensed pharmacy, and we know it's legitimate, there's a chance it could be fake. It could be made by someone who pressed a pill and put something in it when fentanyl is relatively cheap for them to get, make it seem like something else. And we're hearing of cases, whether it's Xanax, it looks like it's a Xanax bar, but it's actually got fentanyl in it, or we've got cocaine with fentanyl in it, methamphetamine with fentanyl in it. We've got ecstasy with fentanyl. Everything has been, I've even heard of marijuana being sprinkled with fentanyl. So there's a chance of death because of this contamination, or whatever we may call it, by drug dealers who are putting together these, you know, making it cheaper for their product, but killing their customers. So this is a big problem, and here's the issue. This sounds great. We have a strip. The way these work, they have a piece of paper or so, like a piece of litmus paper in a way, and you put it, let's say you had a bag full of pills, or it could be heroin, it could be cocaine, it could be anything. Anything with residue, you just put a little water in there, and you put the strip down into it, and then within a matter of seconds to a couple minutes, you'll be able to see it. Kind of like a pregnancy test. One line, you've got fentanyl likely to be in what you have right there, and two lines, no fentanyl is expected. Now they're not perfect, but they're pretty darn effective.
A second there. I see Mary Linden has a comment. She'd like to bring into the discussion.
You're doing a great job of describing the test strips. I just want to make one point. And that is that the test strips only test for actual fentanyl, not for any of the analogs or the manufactured lookalikes. So just know that it doesn't take away the possibility that you could still get something embedded in your substance that you don't know what it is. But at least you'll know it's not fentanyl.
Yes. Okay. No, that's, I appreciate that clarification, because things like carfentanil, and I forgot the name of the other one, that are 10,000 times stronger, literally, things that, it's just frightening. But if you look at actually some of this in detail, if anybody's interested, I mean, you look and they show it next to coins, and literally a couple grains of sand can be the difference between life and death. That's what we're talking about here. So I appreciate that. So this is, again, it's not a foolproof method for anything, but it's a harm reduction method that's shown much promise in throughout the country and throughout the world, and is a way that people who we're not going to be able to stop them from using anyway are hopefully can and not die and not will have an overdose and need to have emergency services called. So we just want to help people stay alive and hopefully get into treatment services and recover. So what we want to do here is look at state law, because the problem is, well, it's great. We've got this money we can use now to purchase these test strips, except these are illegal because these are considered testing supplies. And the drug paraphernalia law for Tennessee is very clear that testing equipment or testing analysis, any of that is definitely considered drug paraphernalia. The exceptions may fall within our syringe exchange program law that we have, but there's only so many syringe exchanges that exist in the state, and only a handful of counties. And that's just a challenging thing to say, well, only those who are in those areas would be able to have access to something. So the unintended consequence we're trying to address here is people getting arrested, especially for possession, which I'm not sure we'll see much in terms of charging for this alone, but this could be used as a reason to initiate a search or potentially lead to an arrest of someone that's just trying, that got help. So even, you know, they technically are protected if they got them from a syringe exchange program as quote unquote injection supplies. That's the loophole that we have in the law, if you will, that allows for this. But we really need to make sure that people can access what is a proven harm reduction method that is available through federal funding, and want to make sure that Tennesseans can get this and not have any chance of getting arrested or going to jail for the use. So,
Ellen, thank you. Yeah, so you've got to have this in by May 17th, correct?
It's got to be into the department by May 17th, correct?
So those of you that have, you know, any interest, any comments or anything, you know, I know it's a short time frame, and this is, you know, this has got to be formed, and Elliot's, you know, working on this. Please, if you've got some information to get to Elliot, please do. If you need contact information, Elliot, what is your best email address for folks to reach?
I can put it in the chat, but it's Elliot, okay, with two L's and one T, at behavioral, with an A-L at the end, healthfoundation.org, O-R-G. And yes, I just wanted to, the last thing I wanted to say on this is I've been talking to folks around the country on this, and especially in North Carolina, that I believe it was 2019, they had success in changing their law to specifically allow for distribution and possession of these fentanyl test strips. And I spoke to the person at the Department of Health and Human Services there. Her name is Anna Stein, who's really helpful and excited that we're looking at this. And she led the effort there, and they had successful. So we're going to look at the law that they have, which is considered model legislation. It's also, I believe, D.C. was where they got some of their language from. So hopefully this will be something the department will consider to be helpful. And I believe our statewide council will see it and want to move it on to the commission.
Okay. Well, that's true. Go ahead, Mary.
It might be important to point out, I just heard from Davidson County, who told me that they also believe that Shelby County has a similar policy drafted by their district attorney that says that they will not prosecute people for possession of fentanyl test strips. So I think there's some selective understanding that this might be a good thing.
That's great, Mary Lynn. And is Shelby County the only jurisdiction you're aware of that has something like that?
No, Davidson County does, and Davidson County told me that they believe Shelby County did as well.
Okay. Where can I get the copy of that language? Where is there any
Mike,
language?
I'm forgetting his last name, but he's from the Davidson County Drug Task Force, who told me about the policy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That's the thing about this. We have a short time frame, so just getting at this as fast as we can, and even if it is technically non-prosecution agreement style here in Davidson County, it certainly would be great to make sure that we have a state law that does not allow anybody here or elsewhere in the state to potentially be harmed unintentionally by these. So thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. And I would like to let folks on the council know that the legislative committee does not end here just because they're submitting. This is a committee that goes throughout the year. And as we're trying to look at the next session already, you know, please, if you've got an interest, and I know there have been a couple of people that have expressed some interest in this, get a hold of Elliot so that you can be a part of this and you can have a voice in things that you have concerns about. So please go ahead and do that. And the other thing I'm going to say is this council decided a couple of years ago, really, that the needs assessment is something that we're going to look at year-round. And, Angie, I want to just say I saw your note pop up, and I will address your concern with you. But so the needs assessment is something that we look at year-round, so you can get involved in that, too, if there are issues that are important to you. So please just reach out. I'd like to welcome Shara Biggs. Thank you for coming in, Shara. Appreciate that. I knew you were having some technical problems there. So Shara and Evelyn Yergin are our co-chairs of the Adult Committee. And at this time, I'd like to ask if you had a report to share with us.
Robin, This is Angie. Can I speak to what Elliot was talking about there? Just don't have a second before
yes,
we
please do. Please do.
Yeah. I know that there is a plan to train officers on this new development in Davidson County. So I don't want it to be seen as something that is fully rolled out at this point. So you know that, Trevor Henderson may be a better contact for you on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Angie. I appreciate that.
And Elliot, they've got, they've really got some terrific information they've been gathering. The reports that they've been doing are excellent. So that probably would be a good point.
Specific to fentanyl test strips?
Angie, I can think you can speak to this better than I can, but I know Trevor's been very in-depth in opioid and other things. So I'm not sure about the test strips, but I would definitely say if somebody had knowledge, he'd be a really good start.
Yeah, Trevor would be good. We don't have – there's no data on test strips because they haven't been used at this point locally. We do have data on, the deaths and other data that's out there publicly about just fentanyl use, and that's out there. That's public data.
So I appreciate that. I did want to say that based on my conversation with Mary Linden previously, I understand that the fentanyl test strips used to be put into these overdose kits that were distributed through the drug coalitions across the state. And I don't want to put you back on the spot, Mary Linden, but I remember you saying somewhere around 2014 or 2015 that may have stopped. And I did do a thorough search of the drug paraphernalia law and looked back at all the changes. And I did not see any change to the law that would have prohibited those. So if you've heard anything further, I would love to know.
No, I think it might have just been an interpretation, but I'll check on that. But yeah, okay. That could have been why the department distributed them and then got told that it was prosecutable. So I don't know.
That sounds like it probably was the case. So thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have discussion on this particular matter before we move on? All right. Thank you. Well, then I'm going to reintroduce Shara Biggs and welcome her as one of our co-chairs of the Adult Committee, and ask Shara if she has any information or a report to share.
Hey, everybody. And I don't think Evelyn's made it on yet. I talked to her shortly before I jumped on. We don't have any major updates. She and I have both had to kind of put our attention elsewhere this past month in preparation for some changes that are being made with our performance evaluation processes at co-op. So, but we've had discussion mainly just trying to brainstorm like where to start in regards to the housing, lack of housing, particularly for those older adults that have physical health needs, and trying to break down like where are we at right now, because it just seems like there's a lack of housing in general, and trying to figure out where the challenges are, like what are the primary challenges with maintaining housing options, and just narrow it down so that we can chip away at the problem, because it just feels quite large right now.
Well, and I know, Shara, one of the things that was brought up as we were doing the needs assessment was the issue with seniors with complex mental health and health issues. And that was just a real, real big one. And then the, mm-hmm. The care ratio within those houses for workers attending to these folks. And then just the whole issue of group homes and housing, in Davidson County mm-hmm. going by the wayside.
And that's kind of in general, that our group homes, that some of them that we've had for a while that we could rely on to at least, basically maintain our individuals with severe mental illnesses, Yeah, the care to resident ratio is a challenge. Training and development of, you know, if anyone, whether it's a house manager or volunteer or even the owner of the home, whoever's going to be working with our folks, just having basic understanding of mental illness. We've run into it. I don't know if people's, if their memories are being wiped or what's happening, but it feels like all of a sudden we have housing providers that don't understand mental illness. So just, you know, the training, development, funding, of course, is always an issue. And the higher needs when we look at individuals with the physical health needs, what does that mean? Because for some of the homes that we work with, it means the structure of the home, having ramps and kind of the ADA accessibility features for someone who may be in a wheelchair or not necessarily able to ambulate a full flight of stairs. Mm-hmm. We have homes that just aren't even built for a person to be able to maneuver themselves throughout the home adequately.
And I'm sure do we know anything as far as, and Evelyn and I have talked about this a little bit, the Creating Homes Initiative, because we know that it's doing a lot for individuals, but the other thing we were looking for was the development of group homes.
Right. It seems like a lot of the Creating Homes Initiative money has gone more to homes that target more substance abuse recovery. It's what I've noticed. And I actually came across something in my email. I was trying to clean up emails yesterday and something regarding the CHIEF funding that I was going to go back and look at. I haven't heard much new about it since earlier this year when they did go back and release the money to the grant awardees that had been awarded prior to COVID. So, yeah, I don't.
Okay.
Just not really sure where that's even at right now.
All right. Well, if there's so I don't know if we have Rama Muhammad with us today, but I know she is someone that we've got some people that have a little more information that are part of this council. And, so possibly maybe drawing them into a committee might be helpful on that basis. I mean, they're not necessarily signed up for adult committee, but because you've got a housing focus, this might be something that, they can really give information on. And so she is somebody that I would highly recommend for that. And Bill out of Park Center, of course, he is, I'm sure you guys know him well. He's one of their housing specialists. So terrific. And yes, we've seen that this has been something we have talked about, I guess the last 2 years is seniors and the needs of our seniors with mental illness in care. We also find, I personally experienced, and maybe some of you on the council have too, when we're trying to place someone who is a senior and has a medical record that includes a mental health issue. And they may be in a really good state, but as soon as I've got families that have called, and as soon as they go to try to place this person in a higher care facility, a nursing home or something like that, suddenly all the beds are taken up and there's no room at the end. And so we run into that. That can be very difficult. And even places that are doing memory care units for dementia and Alzheimer's will, they'll see that on the medical record. And families are having a real hard time with that. So basically, folks, it's called discrimination more than anything. That's the right word for it. And and that's what we need to be fighting. And some of that can be done through education. So thank you guys for looking into that and continuing to look into that. We appreciate that very much. So before I move on to new business, is there anything else from old business, anything else that we may have missed? Even though we don't have the Children's Committee active, are there any children's issues that anyone would like to share? We've got a little room today. I knew we wouldn't have a full agenda today, so we've got a little time. Okay.
This is Elliot. I'll mention that I know it's tough, you know, as we're trying to reset committees and such, but the data is abundantly clear coming in with the impact of COVID-19 on mental health and addiction overdose, that there's a correlation between the younger someone is and the more they're impacted. So it doesn't mean we need to ignore all these issues with older adults and middle-aged adults, but young adults, teenagers, you know, parents of school-age children, these are the groups that are most in need right now, and we need to make sure to wrap as much care around them as possible. So it's definitely something we need to pay attention to.
And thank you. And we do know that youth have been really greatly impacted through this. And those of you that are in the chat, I'm finally able to see the chat that I have to pull away from the meeting in order to do it. And I would like, Tristan just brought up another concern. So thank you, definitely, Elliot. Children are concerned. Thankfully, the governor is addressing some of that. Tristan Petty, who is one of our newest members, just voted upon to join the council. And Tristan, you are welcome to join, unmute yourself and join with what you have to share. But there are definitely, Tristan is sharing Medicare's lack of recognizing providers outside of clinical social workers, and so that the LTCs and LMFTs that provide outside of the clinical social worker, psychologist, and so you know, those things need there are definitely some things that need to be addressed, and you'll forgive me, I'm really having trouble navigating. I've used Teams before, and I don't know if it's my version or what's going on, but it's not something I've ever found real user friendly. So thank you for your comments, guys. So I would like to at this point introduce some new business. I sent to all of you. I have a good thing going on here at NAMI Davidson County. We are growing. And we're adding staff and we're adding service, and we've been meeting the needs of the pandemic. And we still do it on a dime. We still squeeze a dime out of a nickel over here in ways that I think for a small agency, we've got a big footprint. And I'll put a shout out to our staff and volunteers, but now I actually have more staff. So because of our growth and the ways that we are expanding, I'm going to have to step down, and it's not something I do lightly, but I have to be able to have the full focus on what we're doing in our growth, and I'm finding ways that I need to pair, and this unfortunately is one of them. So I have tendered my resignation as chair of the regional council, and at this time, would like to ask if we have anyone that we can accept into nomination. And Avis and Kirby, if there's anything that I am doing out of step as we do this particular procedure, you just jump in and let me know.
Robin, before you move on to that, wanted to say that I wanted to express my sincere gratitude to you as chair of the Region 4 Council. You've been chair, you've been vice chair, you've been a member both of the region and the statewide over a number of years. It seems like it was just yesterday, but you and I have been working together for many years at this point. Right? You have just been a trailblazer and an advocate for individuals in the community with mental health. And I really appreciate you for that. All of your work you've done on the regional council as well as the statewide council and leadership, and as a member even before you became a leader, and the work that you have done and continue to do with NAMI. So we're really going to miss you. True loss there in leadership. We're going to really miss you. However, you know me, Robin, you know me well. Not going to let you get off the hook that easy. I'm sorry. I'm just not. So so we have talked, you and I, a couple of times about you still participating on the Region 4 Council going forward as you can, mm-hmm. or as your time allows you to be, as well as on the Statewide Council again, hopefully still participating as a member or at least a well-attended guest as your time permits. And so we may be losing a leader, but we're not going to lose a member or a dedicated advocate for services on both councils. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to say that before we move forward with nominations, that you will be truly missed in this role. But, again, not allowing you to get out that easy. Trust and believe me. And you know me, Robin, I will hunt you down.
Doors open.
To make sure you stay connected with us. So
I will definitely do that. You know, I don't think people here on the council are aware that my very first day on the job as the executive director of NAMI Davidson, I had been attending the council meetings on behalf of NAMI Tennessee, where I worked at the time. And I walked in on my very first day on the job, and the first day on the job was a council meeting. They said, okay, Children's Committee report. And I was looking around for the Children's Committee report, and they went, Robin? And excuse me? And they said, you inherited the children's chair from the last executive director. So I walked into the children's chair my first day on the job at NAMI Davidson. So I appreciate all of you, and I appreciate all the time that you put in, and the leadership that has been shared by the people on this committee. Now, this committee is bigger. This council is bigger than the people that are here today. Things have waned a little bit with COVID, and I expect when we start getting back in person and start, you know, addressing things again, whenever that is and how we, you know, end up doing that, that we'll build this. This will build some more, and so we'll do that. And I, as I told you, Avis, I am, you know, planning to support whoever is able to do that. So somebody, Elliot was wonderful transitionally with me. He was the chair before me and was a great transition. And Angie, I'm going to call out and go that Angie, I know that Angie's got things. So she is not able to take the, the chairmanship, which is why we're doing this. So that's why we're putting the call out. So she is still serving in his, you know, all of you that are serving on our committees, thank you. So, Avis is right. I'm not running away. I just have to have, my time has just, become really, limited. So I can, do what I can as far as attending the meetings, but I cannot do the chairmanship anymore. So, with that knowledge, and Avis will make sure that I'm in touch with you, and that'll be my pleasure to do so. So at this time, would like to ask if there is anyone who would have any interest in chairing the Region 4 Council, and knowing that you will be supported. and thank you for that comment in the chat. My self-care actually begins Saturday when I go to the mountains and go to the cabin and jump into the hot tub that's waiting for me there. every year I do a walk recovery week from our NAMI Davidson and NAMI walks, and it's this week coming. So Evelyn's joined us. Terrific. So Evelyn, you've joined us just in time. Not that I'm saying anything, but we just acknowledge that I am my resignation, and thank you to Avis for the kind words, and others of you too. So we are looking for recommendations for chair and any nominations for chair of the council, and so if anyone has any ideas or would like more information on what that involves, if you want to know what's involved in that, now would be a really good time to ask. You've got two former chairs and vice chair sitting in here, and we'd be happy to share with you. So does anyone at this time have an interest or know someone they think might have an interest or would like to nominate anyone for the council chairmanship? Don't you love awkward silence? I'd say it's crickets, but, we're supposed to have a big outbreak of those other critters this year.
I'll just say, for anybody hesitant, it's, first of all, one, it's great experience to be on the statewide planning and policy council. You'll get an appointment from the commissioner pending approval, as is typical with these roles. And again, like everybody said, Robin, I appreciate everything you've done. I didn't want to skip that as well. I know I've said that privately to you, it's true. And it is. I mean, this is not the I won't sugarcoat it. It's not the simplest because we have the needs assessment and you need to help coordinate that and make sure. But there's only four meetings a year that you have to coordinate. And for someone looking to build resume experience or relationships with people who are involved in strategic mental health and behavior and addiction work in our state, this is a fantastic opportunity. So just consider it. If you're on the fence, if you haven't thought about the resume aspect or the relationships, that's a huge bonus with it.
And Elliot, yeah, I think you really you do get an inside track of being. Because when you're the council chair or the council vice chair, then you automatically are on the statewide council, and that you get an inside track and some information. You gain an understanding of things that you wouldn't ordinarily gain an understanding of. And I want to give a shout out to Angie. The needs assessment. You, as the chair, you have a real partner in the needs assessment. In Angie with as the vice chair, because in the last 2 years, she and Julie Thacker over at the health department, we've kind of got that systemized now, as far as how we do that. The November meeting is dedicated to that. We do a mini consensus workshop on the needs assessment so we can hear all the voices. We continue it in February. So the needs assessment is in pretty good shape the way it's done. We still need to work on getting and finalizing it, but we've made some real big headway, I think, in the last 2 years in that. And so, but you are, it is a responsibility as far as gathering everyone, and you've got, Rusty is our secretary, we're going to be working on membership and getting that taken care of, and increasing the membership. So, so there is, there are those things. But consider that what Elliot just said, especially if you're someone that is mid-career and looking to or earlier than that, and looking to network more, to know more, to get more of an inside track on how things are done. It certainly was an education to me. One of the reasons I joined this council with different capacities that I did was to learn as much as I did on what goes on it really is insightful, very insightful to do this.
And one more thing I'll share to help here, Robin, real quick, is that I did not, I kind of lucked in a way, or you can call it whatever you want, to being chair, because someone else who was voted to be the chair could not fulfill the role. And so Tom Starling, who was the chair at the time, came back to me and asked if I would help. I had only been involved with the council, the regional council, for maybe two meetings before that, and at least the full group. And Robin had actually brought me in and for the children's committee. And so I barely got to know folks. I hadn't been involved that long. And so it's, you don't have to have been a member for forever in order to take it on. So just anybody who's got some energy and interest in helping to guide us and our, and represent our county and area in the statewide planning and policy council, it's a great opportunity.
And Robin, this is Evelyn. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you for the tremendous job that you have done. You have served faithfully in that position. And if people are interested and think you're interested, I just want to let them know you have a great support team with the other members of the Region 4. We reach out and we will assist you in any way that we can. It all will not fall on you. So someone would want to consider that. It would be an excellent way for you to learn a lot about the department, the state, and other organizations. It will bring you a whole lot closer to what's going on in the community.
Yeah, and thank you, Evelyn. And let me say that Kirby and Avis are invaluable because they will guide you. They'll let you know. They set up the framework of the meetings a lot of times in terms of, definitely, God bless Kirby. She's learned enough about the online process that she ever wanted to know. And Avis has been here, you know, up, down, and sideways. When I've got questions, you know, I get answers. They're there. So very much appreciate that, with that. So I'm going to let this, you know, sit and marinate. And then the next thing we'll come back to it in a little bit. I'm going to go on to the Children's Committee. And what we'll do if nobody comes forward today is we will bring this out to the, full council and keep this going. We need someone to come forward. So the next thing we need is the children's chair. And Servine had done a great job in building this and looking at new ways to do this. And she did a meet and greet. She had a networking meeting, a social networking meeting one day for people just to get to know about this. This was over a year ago, but I remember it because I attended it. It was very successful. We need more representatives for children's mental health at the children's on the children's committee, and the children's chair is responsible for holding meetings for representatives that represent children's mental health. Very frequently, that has been. I know that Maria Smith of TADIS has been involved. I know we've had youth villages represented. We've had Vanderbilt has come pretty regularly. There are people that sometimes attend the children's meeting that don't always attend the full council meeting. So that's something as we move into this era, like Elliot said. This past year has been tough on our kids and our youth. And so this is a time when we do need representation. Your role is to attend, usually via phone, the statewide children's committee meeting and find out what's going on at the state level. I believe Ricky Harris is still the chair for that, if I'm not mistaken, out of Tennessee Voices. And again, as children's chair, I was picking up information I would not have had. And then bringing that back to the full committee. A lot of times the children's committee will have speakers come in, and it's a way for you highlight your organization and what you're doing and share what's going on if you're someone that does serve children. It's a great way for you to share what you've got going on. And then you just you provide a report. There's not a whole lot involved. It's you decide the time of the meeting. It's not like the regular council meeting in that you can decide when you have your meeting, when it's convenient to you. We prefer, when we get past the whole COVID thing, we prefer those meetings in person, but, right now they can be online. You do participate in the needs assessment for children's needs so that our kids are represented to the state. So this is a great opportunity to get your feet wet. Without the responsibility that you would have as a full council chair. But I would really recommend this to someone that is looking to get a little more involved and gain a little bit more knowledge. So any other comments from the floor on this position?
I was just going to say, Robin, that if there are no immediate volunteers for this, I would suggest talking to Ricky. Again, her organization does happen to be headquartered here. She's connected with all these folks, and I would hope there are other members maybe participating in that statewide committee or observing that she might be able to suggest. So hopefully she can assist.
All right. And I want to respond to here we go. Tristan, you just Tristan, feel free to speak up. You don't have to use the chat if you'd like to just speak up. But the Children's Committee you've got the commitment of the hour for the state. It's the state children's meeting. There aren't as many, I don't think there are as state council meetings really addressing children other than the quarterly meeting that I'm aware of. This is a great place to bring up needs that are not being addressed. If you feel that there's something that is not being addressed in children's mental health, this is a really good way to bring this up to the committee, form some consensus around it, and bring it as a regional issue. Region 4 is just Davidson County. Both Region 4 and so issues of gender would be this would be the place for it. Gender issues. What we saw go on through our legislature this year with the gender issues and the transgender issues in a lot of different ways. This would be a good place to bring up mental health around those issues and the impact of it. We do have people like OASIS that occasionally will attend this meeting, but this would be a place to do that. And then through the needs assessment, bring those things forth to the full state through the needs assessment from the Children's Committee. So if you have an interest or you want to know a little bit more about this, my email is rnobling@namidavidson.org. That's rnobling@namidavidson.org. And I'll be happy to answer questions up through Friday. and then after I get back, because I do what Evelyn knows this, I call it waterfalling. And when I'm waterfalling, I'm going literally to waterfalls. And I'm hopefully without signals for phone or email. And I do not respond during that time. That is self-care time, and that is sacred time. So either get a hold of me by Friday or the following week. Tristan, did you have something you wanted to share?
Yeah, just three things. I'm jealous. That's all.
Oh. Yeah. I always do this with our walk. I set it back in February knowing I'm going to need something to look forward to when it's really hard in the spring, because we not just have the walk, you've got legislative season and training season and all kinds of stuff. It's always our biggest quarter of the year. All right. So at this time, is there anyone that would like to come forward to express interest in the chairmanship or have a nomination or recommendation?
Robin, are we still on the children's recommendation?
We're on the children's recommendations. Okay. Okay, so we're going to let that go, and we'll take that to full committee via email. And then I'm going to come back to the full council chair. And does anybody have recommendations or a nomination for that?
Robin, I'd actually be interested as much as I am not sure why I'm saying
Yay!
This. I really think I'd like to do it.
I think that would be wonderful. I would like to share that I have been participating in the PAMI, which is out of Disability Rights of Tennessee, while Shara was chair of that advisory council, that board there, and you did an excellent job in leadership.
Thank you.
There.
Well, I'm still trying. I've got a couple more months on there, and
out of the year, didn't I? Yeah.
Yeah. So I should roll off this fall. So there'll be a little bit of overlap, but I think it'll be okay.
And I'll support. I'll support that transition. So we have we have someone willing to serve in the council position. Would someone like to make a motion? Yeah, I see the yays.
I make a motion.
This is Angie.
Sharon, I go way back.
Thank you all for your support.
Okay, so Elliot has made a motion.
Policy Planning Council.
Yes, so Angie, is that a second to Elliot's motion?
Oh, I didn't realize Elliot motioned. I'll second.
Thank you. There was a lot of discussion going on, so it was easy to miss. So what we need to do, we'll do a vote, but is there, before we do the vote, is there any other discussion? My discussion. Thank you for coming forward. All right. So what we need to do, and we will give you so much support. What we will need
to do. I'm going to hold
you to it. No problem. No problem. So what we need to do is everybody, and again, Avis and Kirby, make sure we've got this right. So we need a voice vote from each individual. Is that correct? That says either yes, no, or abstain? Correct.
That is correct.
My only thought, concern here, Robin, is I don't see how we have close to a quorum.
You know what? Kirby, can you respond to that? Because what we can do is we can make it a recommendation rather than a vote if we have to, and then take it up at the next meeting, and we'll do everything transitionally that we need to do.
Robin, this is Avis. Do you have a number that you know of, or Rusty, I believe, is on here as well, right? Did I say it right, Rusty?
That is correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a number of members? Now, I'm speaking of members that have application in that has been approved. Do we have that number, not including guests, available to determine?
Hang on, let me see. 10-1. And hang on. What have you got?
I was just going to say, as you're looking, the bylaws state that a quorum shall exist when a majority of voting members participates in the meeting, either in person or by phone.
Okay.
Obviously, it counts.
So what I'm asking then, if you have, we have how many people? We have 16, I believe, or is that the number we have? Let me see. 17.
MCOs are not voting members. Just
I'm sorry.
Now, the MCOs don't vote.
Yes, the MCOs don't vote. So if we have...
No, we don't have half.
Do we have... How many members do we have? Do we have over 34 members that are on the roster that we have an application that has been approved?
We do, but, you know...
And the reason why I'm asking that, because if we have half of that, which is 34, that which is present today, we have enough to vote.
No, we don't have near that. So thank you, Elliot, for that procedure.
Yeah, sorry to throw a bump in it. I just don't want to have a problem later if we're
right.
going down the road.
Why don't we do this? You know, we will accept a formal recommendation. Of Shara Biggs, and we will hold the nomination until the next meeting. And then we will work to make sure. So the things that we're going to do in between then are...
Robin, it's Kirby. And Avis, correct me if I'm wrong, but can we also not email the members that have their applications complete and have them vote via email? Because we've done that in other regions as well. That way we don't have to wait to transition...
Yes.
Robin, yes, to share.
That's fine.
That is correct, because it looks like there may be a number of members who are not on the call today or on the computer or what have you today that have joined us. So to give other members an opportunity to weigh in on this, you could also use that process.
And then the other thing I'd like to say, Kirby, is you and I and Rusty, Rusty and I are going to be getting together and looking at the roles, the membership, to see who has. We know some people are gone, and you know, for instance, just Serene would be an example.
Right.
She's had to leave the council, and so we're going to look at who we have, and you know, just over the past year, who's off, who's what have you, and then we do have. We have had some people that during this past year have come into membership that we have voted on. So I would like to make the suggestion that we send an email out in the first week of June after we've met that deadline for the membership update.
That sounds good to me. And we'll just have a more accurate vote.
Can I make a suggestion as well? I suggest we capture the votes we have here in the room and then add to them from people who are not present so that you can start collecting votes. But that's because it's just harder to get people to respond. But I've done that in other meetings with standard Roberts rules. You have a vote, and then to continue, you have to have your quorum of votes. So you have to go until you have enough votes.
So Elliot, I've done something similar in a meeting where you open, the meeting is open, you make the motion, you do the vote, but then you don't close the action. And so the action remains kind of live until you're able to address it, which sounds like what you're talking about.
Essentially. I mean, it's right. Hard. It's a gray area. But, yes, we're taking a vote. We're not going to officially vote anybody in or out right now. It's just you're taking a vote. We've made them. So, basically, my motion, and I can make a new one if we need to, motion to take a vote for, Shara to be our chair, our next chair for Region 4. And we can capture the votes of any voting members here, and then you'll know how many. And looking at the terms in the bylaws, we might even come close to having a quorum once you revisit this, because you can technically remove a member for failure to participate in at least half of the quarterly meetings of any year. And I know, because this has been a tricky year, you could reduce the membership number, accordingly if we need to, and then get new forms from folks. So just a thought.
Okay. And
also, also, this is Avis again. What you're doing here at this meeting is acknowledging and making a recommendation for the nomination. That's one thing. And then you have the voting process. If you follow what I'm, are you following kind of what I'm saying here? So regardless of the quorum or not, we need to make the recommendation, which you've had a first and a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so everybody that's here can do a yes, no, abstain as well here, but you still continue with the vote to make a quorum, to meet the quorum via email for the members that are not attending today.
I think that's what you and I and Elliot are saying. I think that all works. Okay. All right. So let's Rusty, what do you have as the motion or the recommendation? I want to make sure we have the language down. Could you repeat back what you've got? Because there's been a lot of discussion here.
Sure. Let's see. The current motion I have is that we consider Shara Biggs for the Region 4 co-chair.
Okay. And then we additionally, so are we changing that? We had a motion, and your second on that, by the way, so that was Elliot and Angie.
Yes.
And then a motion for the recommendation and to collect the votes of present members. I think we would add to that. And continue the voting process through email with the presence of a quorum.
And at that point, Robin, if you don't at that point via the email piece, then you can move to the next step, what you had mentioned earlier, that you could table that vote to the August, I believe, is the next meeting, right? The August meeting with an email invite statement in that email to say, this is what we plan to do for this August meeting. We really request your attendance, need your attendance to finalize this vote.
Okay. All right. Okay. I think we're good. And Rusty, you've got all that? What does your motion sound like now?
Give me just a second. I was in the process of typing it.
Okay.
I guess this is all one motion now that we recommend Shara Biggs for Region 4 chair, and that we continue the voting through email until we have a quorum. Is that how we want that to look?
The first part's great. We will accept the votes of members present towards the chairmanship, and we'll continue the vote. And I think then you had something. We'll continue to vote online.
Now, you do need each member's vote that's on today if you're going to proceed ahead that way with them saying verbally.
Okay. All right. So that
yes, no, or abstain.
Yeah, so you got that, guys? So we're going to come to each of you. And Kirby, this is being recorded, so if Rusty doesn't necessarily have to grab all of if he misses
right.
something, he can go back to it, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Who is, can you vote for Jennifer? I would say Mary Linden. I think that should be fine. So that's fine. All right, so I'm going to start with our folks on the phone from TMHCA. And I'd like one of you to give your first and last name, please, and whether you have a yes vote, a no vote, or you're abstaining from the vote for and I have to ask you first, are you official members of the council? Because I'm not sure that you are yet. So you'll know that if you've turned in a membership form, because please give me your name, and if we have to, we can check against the membership.
Robin, may I interrupt you just 1 second? I'm sorry.
And there's Jennifer. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
This is Heather Vestal, the West Tennessee Advocate with the NHTA. I've never seen the application.
Okay.
I mean, it's, my vote would be yes.
Okay, so you've not seen the application? How long have you been coming to the meetings, Heather? And I can tell you whether, you know what we can do? Why don't we do this? Rusty, let's go ahead and take the votes down, and then we'll check against the membership list later, because we're not taking the full vote right now. And I think that'll work. So Heather, thank you. Heather Vestal. And Heather Vestal was a yes. All right. And the next person on my TMHCA list there with us on the phone number that ends in 41. Who do I have on the phone? And your last two numbers of your phone number are 41.
Looks like they're muted, Robin.
All right.
I can't unmute them, though.
I am, I'm going to go to the next individual that's on the phone with an 8-5 as the last two numbers.
I think that's me. This is Heather again. The 8-5.
Oh, Heather. That's Heather again? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. I have a guest showing up here, and I'm not sure what the format is. But that's a guest, so I would I do not know who that is. Avis, no. Elliot, yes, no, or abstain, please?
Yes.
Okay. Evelyn, yes, no, or abstain, please? You're still
yes.
Muted?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, we got Evelyn. Thank you. Cooper doesn't vote. Mary Lyndon, I have you as a member, even if Jennifer is. I think, but you were there for Jennifer.
Yeah, I mean, we're both here, but.
Yeah, so just, so.
We're both yeses, if you can record
both. Both yeses. So that is Jennifer Jones and Mary Lyndon Salter. So two yeses there. Willie, I know that you're on. If you could unmute, are you a yes, no, or an abstain? Oh, maybe she stepped away because we were seeing her head bobbing in and out of there a little bit. She may have stepped away. Okay, we may have to come back to Willie, Rusty. Shara, you can vote for yourself. So I think if you believe in you, you should vote yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Angie, yes, no, or abstain, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Rusty, yes, no, or abstain, please?
I thought I'm not a voting member.
You? Oh, yeah, because you're with the, thank you, I forgot. See, we think of you as, you know, just counsel.
I love my position. I can't be promoted.
Good. There you go. Tristan, yes, no, or abstain, please? I got a little something there, but I couldn't make out what it was.
Yes.
Thank you. Sheldon, yes, no, or abstain, please? And you're on mute. And if we could get you off mute for the vote. Okay. So we're not, we'll have to, well, are you there, Sheldon? Okay. So Rusty will make a note to come back to Sheldon as when we reopen the, you know, when we continue the vote. I am a yes. Is there anybody that has voting privileges? That means you are a member Is there anybody that I have missed for the vote? Okay. All right. So we are going to comment. Who was there?
I thought I was a voting member. You can check on that.
Dummy. Thank you. Thank you. She is a she is a voting member. I'm just, and guys, if I'm missing you, it's because I can only see what's up and down here on the side. And so Dalmis is a yes.
It is a yes.
Yep, Dalmis is a yes. And is there anybody else that I'm missing? Okay, has Sheldon come back? All right. So we're going to leave this stand. This is open. So we're not going to take any further action on this. This is just open. All right. Thank you very much, Sheriff, for coming forward. Very much appreciate that. And thank you, Elliot and Avis, in helping us craft how we can do this. And I'm going
to
go back.
Just to be clear, Robin. Sorry, this is Avis. Just to be clear, once all of this is said and done and you get your final vote in from the council in its totality, the next step is would be for Shara to submit a resume to us via you, and that information we will craft a memo to the commissioner along with attaching her resume to the commissioner for consideration, and then we will let you know the outcome of that. If someone else comes forward after you submit this information out to email who's interested in this position as well, then you would also need to take that in consideration and follow the procedure going forward with that additional nomination or recommendation from the council. So I just wanted to be clear, everybody to be clear on the process and how we proceed from here.
Thank you, Avis. Very much
appreciate
that.
Well, Avis, did you say that my resume would need to get sent to Robin?
Yeah.
Once everything is voted on, then the next step, she would contact you, and then you would send your most current resume to Robin, and she would send it to Kirby and I to review. And then if we had any questions, we could get back with you. If not, we would proceed ahead with sending that on to the commissioner for consideration.
Awesome. Thank you.
And thanks again, Charlotte. Stepping up to volunteer, and depending on the outcome, Kirby and I will most definitely, as well as with Robin saying, will work with you going forward.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You are welcome. Thank you.
For any of you on the council, just Avis was just describing, this is an appointment by the Commissioner of Mental Health. That's where the approval, and you will, you're someone that takes on the leadership role in the council, then you will receive a letter from the commissioner, when your appointment is accepted. So it's again, resume building, nice thing to have. All right. Thank you, folks. We know our next regular meeting is going to be August 4th of 2021. We will keep you apprised as we are apprised of what is happening as far as, how we're meeting and what is going on with that. I would like to make a recommendation to our council and to our leadership that we do, regardless of what is put forth by the governor, that we poll and do a survey of our members to see where they're at, where their comfort levels are, what they're thinking about all of this, and what are their levels of safety and concern. It's different for all of us for a lot of different reasons, and I want to thank all of you for your participation in this last year and the things that you shared with us that you have done. I can remember a year ago having this meeting, and two things that stick in my head. One was, I remember Evelyn and Barbara from Park Center before Barbara retired, and Patrick. And I remember the outreach, you know, to Patrick Starnes of True Care was having a hard time with his homes. A lot of people were, you know, there were difficulties getting medication to people, and just hearing how everyone was stepping up and stepping out to help people and what we were doing. I am so proud of this mental health community because you have worked your and when I say mental health, guys, I'm always including behavioral health, substance abuse, because I don't see one as being without the other. They're together, even though sometimes you weigh more on one or more on the other with what you do. I am so proud of this community for the way it has met this crisis and what you have done for people. It's been amazing. I know you are all pushed to your limits, and it's not over. I know you're still busy, and so are we. But I want to thank each and every one of you for your contribution to the people we serve, and thank you for continuing to come to this council and keep us informed and keep us supported and the way we've supported each other. So I thank you so very much, and it's been my pleasure to serve, and we'll follow up. All right, folks. Does anybody have any last minute announcements they'd like to make? We've got 6 minutes, and if anybody has something they think it'd be nice for us to know, or you want us, you know, you need help with, let us know.
Robin, I have a couple of questions. I don't know if they're meeting business. So.
All right, I'm going to go to Rusty first, and then I'll go to the next person. Yes, Rusty, go ahead, please.
Well, I just, you know, of course, we got the we're trying to get our membership list for next year right, and mm-hmm. Who actually keeps our applications? Where is a copy of the?
They go to the state.
And so I keep a copy, but they go to the state.
Okay.
Avis and Kirby keep them.
Yeah, I keep a copy, but you, the secretary, chair, or vice chair should also have a copy on file as well.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you right now that the secretary doesn't.
That's okay, Rusty.
So if I could get those from somebody, you know, even just electronic thing of the names so we know where to start from. And I would happily work with whoever I have to work with, be it our chairs, be it Avis, be it Kirby, whatever, to we need a membership drive. We need some more people here. It really disappoints me, the companies and MCOs especially that aren't at the table here. And I know the MCOs aren't voting, but we have a responsibility to be here.
Thank you, Rusty. And you and I are going to get together. We'll set up a meeting so that we can get that count in and get you back up to speed. You know, with all the stuff for the membership, and thank you for what you just expressed. So, and who is the next person? There was somebody else in there.
Robin, it's Angie.
Yes.
I just want to say thank you to you. I hadn't gotten a chance to do that, but again, I think echoing everybody else's kind words and sentiments, it's been a pleasure working with you as the co-chair. So appreciate your leadership.
And thank you for your support, Angie, especially with the needs assessments. Really appreciate it. And I want to thank Angie Elliott and the people that have served on the different committees. So those of you that have been doing the legislative committee and meeting separately with Elliott and just the different things that people have done. Thank you so much. We had a question. I think I'd like Avis and Kirby to input this. Somebody was asking if we share our the contact list or the membership list. And it's not shared in terms of, we don't share the list for, it's not for any distribution other than this council. And, but as far as that goes, Avis or Kirby, I usually do a blind copy and do not show our list. Avis and Kirby, I'd like your input on that.
Right. So the difference is with the Regional Planning and Policy Council, they're voluntary to join. So we don't share, you know, there's information when you apply to be a member, personal information in there, should you choose to answer it. So we don't just share that. The difference is the Statewide Planning and Policy Council, where members are appointed, that's public. So that's different. So I encourage if you want information shared with the membership or the Region 4 Council, to send that to the chair, vice chair, or secretary so that they can distribute it on your behalf.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. All right. Just a minute ago, any other comments or questions or announcements?
I have a quick announcement. The Behavioral Health Foundation, in collaboration with an organization called the Police Treatment and Community Collaborative and the Tennessee Diversion Coalition, are going to host a free 90-minute webinar conversation with a national leader in the field of diversion and deflection. So for anybody interested in pre-arrest diversion, deflection, you know, models like, you know, harm reduction models, CAHOOTs, all everything in between, we have one of the top voices in the country, in the world. His name is Jack Charlier, a friend of mine. And so that'll be on June 24th at 10 a.m. And I'll be getting information out to folks. So I just wanted to let folks know. So if anybody is for sure wanting to get on that list, you're welcome to reach out. But I'll send it and make sure you get a copy, Robin. And Shara.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right. Well, after many years of leadership service, I am going to close this meeting. And the next time, you hopefully will have a new leader in place. Thank you very much, all of you. And have a good rest of the day.
Thank Bye. You.
Bye,
everyone.
Bye, all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for everything, Robin.
Thank you, Cobra.
Thanks.